The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC Podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this edition of the TWBC Podcast. I'm Tony Lightfoot, and glad to have the pleasure of your company and your support. So, 2025 season has been a remarkable season for a number of different athletes, but one that stands out amongst the crowd of high achievers within the sport of tournament water skiing right from the very start is here with me now. Hello to Charlie Ross. How are you doing, sir?
How's it going? Yeah, happy to be on here, and thank you, Tony. Excited to be a part of this.
Not a problem. So we've just come off two exciting tournaments, World Championships and the Mastercraft Pro. But for you, the season started all the way in March, and let's get to it. So you had your adventures along the Yarra River and you prevailed. So kind of tell us a little bit about how that shaped up.
Yeah, so it started in March, but it almost feels like it started in January 2 years ago, because I didn't take any time off going into Moomba. Knew I had an opportunity to ski through the winter and that a lot of people weren't doing so, and wanted to be at Moomba as prepared as anyone. And so went to Moomba, had a good start. Moomba's a place where in the past it's been 1.5 at 38 every year, and just kind of struggling, because if anything is not perfect, the Yarra will prove it out to you.
We'll chew you up and spit you out very rapidly.
Of course. It's where you see a skier, and where they fall is where they need to work on, because it is brutal. And so went there. It's a big wake-up call in the prelims. Usually, but honestly, this year I was skiing so much at Rollins with Mark Betzel, and I owe this title obviously to Bergs, my dad, and the people I've had with me almost my entire life, but a lot to Mark as well, because we would sit on the dock at Rollins and wait for the tour boats to go out and for it to be jet skis all over the place, pontoon boats, tour boats on a public lake, and we would go ski then. And there were some days where it's 32 and you hit a wake and you're flying out the front. And so
now, when you said something about preparation right at the very start of this podcast, I thought you meant to prepare like physically, you know, strength training, what out there. I didn't know that the preparation was going to extend to this extent, though.
Yeah, no, it was pretty big. We did obviously a lot of strength training. From end of the season, to Moomba, I was like, okay, I'm not strong enough in the gym, and put on 20 pounds and 20 pounds of muscle. And then, a lot of also training and as rolly as we could get it. And so I got to Moomba, and of course it feels weird and you're like, holy crap, how am I going to do this at first? But then I'm like, okay, I've been doing this for a few months. I'm good with it.
Didn't that kind of preparation present a few risks to you? Because if you edge change and you hit a wave and the ski comes back at you, ankle done, season over.
I mean, that's when it's good to have a crew around you like Mark, who we can kind of assess and know, hey, here's when we're pushing it. Or there were days where it's 20 mile an hour winds, choppy, and tour boats and a surf boat out on the lake, and I'm wanting to go, because I'm thinking, hey, if I can run 38 in this, I can run 38 there 10 times out of 10. And he's like, I'm not letting you ski. And he would, we would go look at the course, and I'm like, okay. And I'm putting my vest on. He's like, nope. And rips us back to the dock. And so it is kind of a risk reward, but if there's no risk, there is no reward. And so I feel like that's when, hey, having good equipment like a D3, a Reflex, a Nautique on campus, you can kind of ensure that you're as safe as possible while pushing. If mm-hmm. I hit a wake and blow the tail, I'm at less risk of hurting my ankle because I'm in a reflex, and I'm also in less risk of blowing the tail because I'm on a ski that I think is the best designed and will hold through the turn the best.
Okay, but I mean, you've done all the preparation, I mean, to prepare to go down to Moonbury in March, but the one thing you can't prepare for, the current.
Yeah. No, the current is definitely a different thing. You feel like, okay, good one, good two, I should be early, and I'm late. But that's just kind of roll the dice and see what you can do. In the prelims, I felt like I skied well, was top seed. And that was my first time top seed at a pro event, knowing what I need to win. And so was able to do it. Pretty cool place to have a first pro win at Moomba. One of the biggest events probably of the year. People on the shore. One of the hardest events. Pretty special moment.
Okay, so you won that event and you're getting ready for the season, but you've also had to factor in college, right? In amongst all of that, you know? So, I mean, you took some time off, some days and off from college. Was it relatively straightforward to get back into the whole college life, or did you kind of have to struggle a little bit in the spring semester? Or
no, it was a pretty easy transition. I'm lucky. There is no place like Rollins for skiing. I know there's going to be some Louisiana Rollins banter, but it's pretty special, and it's a place where I'm on my second year and already like I never want to leave here. So it's a pretty cool place. We've got...
So remind me what your major is.
I'm doing economics, and I'll finish that with 2 years left in either math or computer science for a second major.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so have to make that decision kind of quick here. But no, it's Rollins is special, and we're hoping to have a big recruiting class this year and go for a collegiate title. Take it from Louisiana.
Okay. Okay. And I do have to put a disclaimer here that I'm a former skier from Louisiana's Raging Cajun. So there you go.
Hence why I'm rubbing it in.
Oh, okay. Don't rub it in too much anyway. All right then. So after you got back from Melbourne in March, what was your next tournament how much of a boost was it to actually get this first pro win under your belt?
Yeah, that was a good way to start the season because it's like, okay, I can do this. And so, you know, running into Swiss Pro, that was not my best event, 3 at 41, but then was into Masters, again, not my best event. I think Masters is the only cut I ever missed this year. And so that was a bit of a bummer. Especially when it was 3 at 39 was the cut to the finals, and I was sitting pretty with 2.5.
So how do you take the highs and the lows? You know, I mean like several years ago, the Swiss Pro, I mean, you stunned the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, what was it, like age 14 or something like
15.
That?
15. Just turned 15,
running 39.5 off, you know, and then it took a while to get that consistency to be consistent. You know?
No, it was a long time of feeling like, okay, I'm the next guy up. I'm the one people are kind of talking about to challenge Nate and Freddie. And just for years, like until this year, I mean, that's 5 years of nope, going like 5 years of doing the entire season, missing cuts, not challenging, not podiuming, not nowhere really close. And so it's, well, shoot, if you asked me when I was 15 and I had just done 1 at 39 PB to 1 at 41 in 1 year. And so I'm thinking, yeah, I can do this. I'm running 5 in practice and I can run it in practice. I can be winning pro events when I'm 16, 17. And then you quickly realize that's not how it works. And it is years of missing and missing and missing and missing and missing and just being like, oh, holy crap, when is this going to come? And so to kind of have that breakthrough in March in Moomba, and then carry that through the year with like kind of the weight almost lifted on you. It's less of, okay, when am I finally gonna push through and prove I can do it, to okay, I did it. Let's just see how many times we can do it this season and see how many events we can win.
A lot of skiers deny that level of of self-awareness, you know, going forwards, you know, I mean, they'll struggle for years and years and years until they regain that kind of consistency back. But I mean, you knew that this kind of self-awareness was going to be critical to your success going forwards, you know, however long it takes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, of course you want it immediately. Like I came one at 41 at Swiss when I was 15, I felt like I was on top of the world. Like, and then it was, you know, a bit of a bad U17, bad junior masters, but then one at 41 at the masters the next year. And no one had ever run 39 there. And still, like, no one had ever run 39 in junior. And still these days, it's usually run 39, you win the masters. And so that was like, holy crap, okay. When I was 15, big highlight. When I was 16, big highlight. And then 17, nothing really. 18, yeah. And it just kind of goes into that slump. And you think, okay, well, what's wrong? I was having big moments last year and when I was a junior and everyone was talking about, holy crap, he can win events when he was 16. And I never did. And it's like what has changed? And it's nothing. It's just, it's honestly what I've learned is immense respect towards the top guys, Nate, Freddie, Will, for their level of their, like when I was on, I think I had a peak close where I could maybe win an event, but it's their level of consistency and the training they've done year in and year out. It's what makes them the best.
Did you seek any kind of counsel from any of the pro skiers? I mean, I know that you take a lot of your cues from within your family, your sister, your dad, your mom, you know, they've all that, you know, it takes a village, you know, yeah. that type of deal. But I mean, did you call upon the counsel from anyone else? Maybe Andrew probably is probably the yeah. next closest confidant. Yeah,
of course. I mean, Bergs has been a part of my training and honestly making my technique and making me as a skier since I was 13. I mean, he's been my main, like him and my dad as my main two coaches, and then a lot of sets with Bergs. And then obviously last August, a lot of sets with Mark. And what that was different was, okay, it's taking years of intense coaching and going to Mark Betts, who I cannot say enough good things about skiing with him, and being able to take, okay, my dad and Bergs, we're trying to work on this. I'm going to go to Rollins for the week and I'm going to do 10 sets where that is the only thing I think about, where it's not, okay, after two sets, here's another, okay, check the box, here's another key. And then it pops up in 2 weeks. It's, I'm taking everything that Bergs and my dad, like the plan they laid out, and just going and having my spot to just do set after set, after set, after set, after set, and hammer it in. And Mark's pretty good at that. He keeps it such a light environment, and you're able to ski with your teammates, and it's really, really fun. And, you know, it's obviously fun skiing with Bergs and my dad as well. Bergs and I have a pretty good time, and same with my dad, obviously. But it was just a different sort of training environment.
Indeed.
I have to add one more. I started working online coaching with Marcus. And Marcus Brown,
Flow Point Method.
Well, not even training, but doing one-on-one calls with him where I have videos from the last week and we're breaking it down to the smallest frame of where am I here? Where are Nate, Freddie, Will? Where am I ideally? Where are we going? What are we going to do about it? And so a lot of that. And so I'm a big thank you to him. And it's kind of what... It's a level of detail that kind of started the season.
All right, let's go back a couple of seasons. You know, World Championships, World U21 Championships, where you scored your first world title. That was in Chapala. That was kind of like the awakening, as it were. You know, you got your first ever 39.5 off at age 15,
finally.
Finally, and then you got...
Yeah, finally win a world.
Finally win a world championship, which kind of like set things going. And I mean, looking back upon that, I mean, do you feel that that was like the main catalyst?
that was a big moment. I mean, I was 18, which seems young, but that was my fourth world championships, if you include Open, two U17s, and a U21 prior. Oh, no. That was my fifth, because two U17s, an Open, a previous U21 Worlds, and then this is my, like, the U21 Worlds, where it's like, okay, I've come in top seed to U17 twice now, I think. I've come in top three seed to a U21 Worlds before, and I've had a Worlds where I was in the top 10 and flaked out and didn't make the cut. And so it's like, Worlds have never, ever gone well. Like, I've never won, besides Junior Masters, I've won two of those at that point, but I had never won a World Championships. And so to finally have that moment where it's kind of pressure off the back, like, okay, finally we got one under the belt and we can kind of sigh for a little bit.
All right, and I make reference to two seasons ago because you're one of the very few at U21 or even junior level to actually successfully defend a title, which you did this year over at the Lakes of Cast in Stone, credit to pay.
Yeah.
So obviously you were thrilled to win that title 2 years ago, but how does this compare?
This one's pretty special. I mean, skiing for Canada in Canada, you know, it being my last U21 Worlds, my last junior Worlds, now I only have Open Worlds left, which are a little more stressful. So to have that kind of go well, ski well, be in Calgary. I hadn't spent much time in Calgary in the past. It was pretty cool. That's one where I'll remember for a long time.
Indeed, indeed. How important is it to have adequate rest in the middle of the season? Because, I mean, you typically after Masters or a week or two afterwards, you're normally off north of the border with a wakeboard boat and your slalom boat and just try and get away from the maddened crowd, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, it's a break kind of from everyday life in the season, but still, I would say I ski more in Canada on a week per week basis than in Florida in the summer, just because your hands can't take it here. And so I can get up there, we're in the cold water, and do three sets a day every day, and then like knock that out in the morning and then go enjoy the day. It's a pretty nice situation. It's similar to Masters as well. It's a rolly lake, it's a rock shore lake, and so it's a lot of every single summer going from, okay, I'm running 41 every day in practice in Florida, to okay, I just missed 39 a bunch, and kind of slowly needing to build up, and then by the end of the summer running a few 41s there. And so I think it's good for the skiing. I think it's good to test it.
Okay, so after Masters, you're in mid-season. So what tournaments do you have from there? You had the U21 Worlds, which were in
Calgary.
In Calgary. What month was this? All of the tournaments just seem to like just fold into just one mass of the summer, and you can't even separate them.
But I'll give the overview. It went Masters, then Monaco, which was kind of a big.
Oh yeah, let's talk about that, because yeah. I mean, you got through 10.25 meters and you set the Canadian national record at that moment right there.
Yeah, well, I said it the week before at Swiss, but then it was kind of tied it, did it in a pro event, proved that I can win a pro event by putting out a massive score. That was a really cool moment, and one that I'll kind of remember well. You know, I had Nate and Freddie on the dock after me and knew I needed a big score, and was happy to go do something like that. And then, I don't know, it was just a fun trip. And then from there,
you went to Botas afterwards, right?
Yeah, I actually flew back to Florida, spent a week with some of my high school friends in like Jupiter area, did a record tournament down there. Then flew to Canada, then to Botas. I was doing a lot of flying, and then
what kind of mileage program do you have?
Oof, Delta Sky Miles. Delta, please sponsor me, because it is not going well. Not building status. Still stuck on silver, which I have no idea how. Three trips to Europe, a trip to Australia, and still in silver status. Oof. But then Botas, again, kind of a disappointment. You know, in the head-to-head, Freddie knocked me out, which me and Freddie are pretty close, so was pretty sour, but also, you know, we're good friends, and so he got the better of me that day. And then from there, flew back to Canada, skied for a few weeks, and then did California Pro, back to Toronto the next week, Calgary, back to Toronto the next week, Paraguay for Junior Pan Am Games, straight to Milan for Open Worlds, straight to Florida to start school, and I had already missed 2 weeks of school.
Wow.
So it was a hectic, packed half end of the season.
So how important was that one, that Junior Pan American Games in Paraguay? You know, because it would seem to be not that much of a major tournament, at least in the eyes of those that are looking at it from the United States or even Europe, you know. But I mean, you gave this event a pretty high priority, didn't you?
I viewed it as the same as a U21 Worlds or any pro event, because it is the first time where I had been a part of a multi-sport games. And so it's not just a ski event, it's you're with the Canadian national team. I had lunch with the president of the Canadian Olympic Committee. Wow. And so that's cool moments where it's different from anything I've really experienced. And so wanted to display skiing as high as I could and ski the best I could, because it's, we deserve to be in Olympics. And you know, I mean, we have, I think the Canadian Olympic Committee president was there, and then I think the Chilean Olympic Committee president was there, and so Maddie got to talk to them, and we were pushing it. It deserves to be in Olympics, and let's get it done.
All right, then. So, having accrued all of these miles, of which you're not going to see much of a reward from, at least so far as Delta Sky Miles are concerned.
Yeah.
You flew to Italy.
Yeah.
For the preparation for the World Championship. I mean, what kind of jet lag was that? Oh, my word. Oof,
that was a time difference. But slept on the flight. And then got to Italy, arrived, wasn't planning on skiing, and then was sitting at the lake going, okay, I would like to go for a set. And so skied right after and was just getting familiar with the site, getting familiar with the food.
what was different about the food so far as you're concerned?
I mean, it seems like I ate pasta and gelato every day and every night for dinner, and still came back 3 pounds lighter. So
risotto is pretty good too.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah, they eat pretty good there. That was cool.
Yeah, it's most of it's pretty natural, you know, which is a deep contrast to a lot of processed of stuff course. In this part of the world.
Yeah,
you know?
It seems like there's healthy wheat there rather than enriched.
Indeed. So, yeah, are you gluten sensitive?
No, not gluten sensitive, but you got to watch. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm the best eater. If my friends are listening, they're gonna laugh. But I think you got to kind of watch. It's tough when you're seeing genetically modified stuff and being like, oh yeah, that's the way it should be. I mean, God made food in a specific way for us to eat, not for it to be played with by a scientist.
All right, then. So let's continue on. World Championships, first round. How did that play out for you?
First round, everyone's kind of stacked at 3 at 41, and I was leaving the dock saying, okay, if I run a 3, I'm in the finals, but I don't want to just go run a 3, because if you're first off the dock or second off the dock, it, like, you don't know what you need. It's usually the people who are at the end who win the worlds. And so, like, that's just what history showed. And so I knew.
So there was 9 threes and yeah. 3 and 3 fours, right?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know exactly, but I knew I did not want to be a part of the log jam. I wanted to turn. I wanted to go. And if it got 2.5, oh well. And it's just the risks you play, but I wanted to just go for it. I mean, you don't want to look back at your career with what ifs. And looking back on the seasons prior, I'm thinking, okay, first round Swiss Pro, what if I turned 3 ball rather than standing it up? Maybe I had a seed, and maybe I would have known what I needed to do. I mean, it's the mental game you play when you lay up. And so I knew I didn't want to lay up. And so did that, and then put it together. It was second last in the finals, and knew I needed a one at 43 and was happy to get it.
All right, then. So moving on to the finals. One of the greatest slalom finals in the history of the tournament. Men's slalom, go.
Yeah, I guess that makes me the greatest finals loser of all time.
No, I'm not going to say it. You said it.
No. I wanted, waking up that morning, it was okay, go run a one at 43. And I was saying to myself, run a one at 43 and you win the worlds, because that's what history showed. And props to Nate. He skied really, really good. And man, that runoff kind of hurt. And so, and there's not many times when you're going, okay, I'm leaving the dock in a runoff for the chance of world champion. And so that was a big deal. And, you know, it was a pretty hard sting to fall short. Of course, if you asked me at the beginning of the year, hey, would you be happy with a one at 43 and a second at the world championships, considering I'd never run 41, I'd be, heck yeah, okay, that's pretty cool. But in that moment, you're not thinking that. You're thinking, man, that stings. I was right there. And you need to, like, those are moments you want to seize.
Indeed, indeed. You know, so between you and Nate, you know, you're both on the same ski, isn't that right? Or is there a slight difference between the two?
As far as I'm concerned, we're on the exact same.
We're on the same ski. Okay, so you return here, back 2 weeks late into Rollins. And then we've got Mastercraft Pro and another tournament that was going on concurrently, where you set a pending national record.
Yeah, set the collegiate national record, which Will set in 2003. And, you know, watching Will and growing up, admiring Will and wanting to be like Will on and off the water. Pretty cool. He gave me a big hug when I saw him on Saturday, and that was a cool moment. I mean, his record stood since 2003 to now. Hopefully it passes, but that's a testament to the career he's had, and that he set a record that lasted 22 years. It's older than I am. Like, that's a crazy, it's older than collegiate ski, like a skier can be. I mean, that's such a testament to the career he's had. And then I'll kind of transition into Mastercraft. Had a 4.5 the day before, which I wanted a big score first round to kind of take the pressure off and not be so early in Mastercraft rushing from one event to the other. And so in finals, run a one at 43, feeling like, okay, let's go. But I know Nate's on the dock and I know what happened the week before. And of course it happens again. Runoff, I think it was like Charlie versus Nate round two. Ran two at 41 in the first runoff, feeling like, oh man, I just left the door open. I was like, I kind of went into a ball, like I was like, oh, that's not enough. And then somehow he let go of the handle early before three, and it's okay,
let's do it again.
And again, fall short. So that one kind of stings. Back-to-back weeks of one at 43, second place.
All right. And there is one more slalom tournament of the season, but you're not skiing in this last one?
No, I asked John actually last week, and I was like, hey, look, I know it's late and I know how tournaments go. Like, I'm not going to be offended in any way if I don't get in, because I know how tournaments go. But he said he'll get back to me this week, so hopefully I ski. But I originally was planning like junior Pan Am, or junior world, straight to junior Pan Am game, straight to open worlds, then to settle into school and then go straight to Mastercraft Pro. Like, I haven't had a week to just kind of catch myself. And so I was kind of like, as much as I would like to go, I didn't know what I was going to be like school situation wise for, you know, I mean, Travers is a special tournament in the sense that there is the go-karting and the shooting, which is very, very cool, but I didn't know what I was going to be from a time perspective. And so passed on it, kicking myself now that I'm skiing good and have caught up. But
now you mentioned go-karting. Now if you get into this tournament, you'll go-karting, but you saw a whole different side of motorsport in the middle of the summer right after the Worlds. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I got to go to Monza, which was really, really cool. You know, big thank you to the Orsel family and Unicredit for bringing us, and that was an awesome event. You know, got to meet Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton. Leclerc, was saying that he found out Mumba and their F1 race in Melbourne at the same time, and he wants hopefully we'll see him and Lewis, because very, very nice people, down to earth. And then got to go in the hot lap car in a Ferrari along around the track at Monza. And I have a video of it, and I'm about as white as a ghost. Holy! I had Mark Chenet was driving, who's an old former F1 driver. Man, those cars go fast, and that's not even an F1 car. So, whew.
So you get it. So what kind of perspective on speed do you have now? I mean, you know you like hurtle across the wakes at 43 off and 9.75 meters. That now you're booking it between those buoys.
Yeah,
in this car,
that's fast. And I came home from school and I told my dad and mom. I was like, "Hey, I've got good news." And they're like, "What's that?" I said, "Well, I'm doing a bunch of driving between Rollins and home. I might as well be practicing to be an F1 driver and seeing how fast." And they said, "Yeah, you do that, you'll be paying your own insurance." And I said, "Okay, I'm gonna keep it nice at 70 then."
Yeah, they've got plenty of good go-kart tracks around this area, but I'm sure it's not going to be even a patch upon what you experienced there in Monza. But anyway, we're going to wrap this up. Okay, thanks a lot, Charlie. And anything you'd like to say in closing?
Just was a really fun season. Was really, really inspiring and impressive to see Freddie's return. Winning Masters is something that, you know, I've always wanted to do, and to see him go from broken leg to less than a year later win Masters, I feel like that's a moment where that's probably the biggest part of the season. And so thank you to everyone around me for the season. Thank you to Nautique, D3, Wintergarden Waterski, the list goes on and on, Muskoka 365, new sponsor picked up. And thank you to my coaches. It was a fun year. Thank you to TWBC. This was an amazing year, and already excited for the next one.
And we'll definitely be excited for you and whatever comes
and
up.
And Masterline, sorry. Thank you,
Masterline. And, of course, Masterline as well. You can't ski without a rope, and Masterline is among the best in the business. All right, then, that concludes this edition of the TWBC podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot. You just listened to Charlie Ross. And until next time, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform, and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.